serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an episode originating from the historic USS Midway Museum in San Diego. We've heard from the ship's historian as well as a former Navy pilot who volunteers his time here, and now we get to meet Joe Neves, a 90-year-old World War II veteran who's been a docent here since the museum first opened to the public.
14 years I've been here and I've enjoyed every day that I can, right here, 14 years.
Why do you do it?
For my shipmates that are not here anymore, try to keep them in the memories of others in the younger generation.
And you're set up here, right next to some storyboards of your service, of other aircraft carrier stories, and you're right under the wing of a pretty significant aircraft as well.
It's an F-4U Corsair. It was a very famous fighter during World War II. That really helped us against the Japanese.
I bet you saw and heard a lot of those take off.
A lot of them take off. Well, it was the fastest aircraft we had, 405 miles an hour straight away, and it's 75 years old. So it saved a lot of guys. A good fighter.
I want to get your story, but take me back to the beginning. I understand your folks were immigrants from Lisbon, Portugal, but you were born in New York City. What was your life like growing up?
Well, my parents didn't speak English. I lost my mother when I was 8 years old, so my father had to raise me, and he didn't speak English. And just went on, and when the war broke out, I begged him to sign the papers and let me go at 17 years old. I was an only son, and he was having a hard time to raise me anyway. But I went in, and thanks to him, whatever happened to my future, which I'm very proud of, is all up to it was all his doing.
Well, I want to hear more about that, but I also want to ask you about a day when you were only 14, because I bet you remember December 7th, 1941.
Yes, I remember 1941. I was just coming out of the theater, my friend and I. They had a special newspapers that war had broken out, that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. I think at that time I was just going on 14 years old. And I said to my friend, I said, when we get a chance, you and I, when we get 17, let's join the Navy, you know? And by God, we did, and I've got pictures of it on the board here of him. Of course, all my friends, they're all gone now. Everyone that I served with is gone. I guess I'm the last of the ones that I know.
And when you first went into the Navy, what did you think you were going to be doing?
Well, I asked to be in the Air Force, Naval Air Force. I wanted to get on a carrier and fly. I wanted to fly.
Were you hoping you'd be a pilot?
No, I would never be that great. I would never be that good. But I went to gunnery school, and that was my thing. I was happy doing what I was doing.
And I'm looking at your flight jacket here, and you've got that SB-2C Hell Diver right on the sleeve. Was that the first dive bomber you were in, or was there another one before that?
Well, there was the SBD. It's way down the other end, and it was a little smaller, didn't carry much armament. But this one here was a little bigger. It carried rockets. It had four 500-pound bombs, or it could carry a torpedo. It wasn't fast, but it did the job.
And tell everybody where you sat on that plane and what you had to do.
Well, I sat backwards on a dive bomber with twin 50 caliber machine guns at an altitude of 13,000 feet while our fighter planes were protecting the torpedo planes so they could drop their torpedoes. And then when the Japanese came in and we saw they were clear, then we would dive down. Of course, my canopy would be open. I would be sitting backwards. I couldn't move because of the pressure. And I didn't know where we were going. All I could see was the sky. And it wasn't until he pulled out that anything that was below me, I didn't ask who they were. I just did what I had to do.
That's a great description. I've talked to a lot of rear-facing gunners, but I don't know if I've ever heard it described quite like that. Have you ever been on a roller coaster that came close to that feeling?
No. Well, when I was young, I thought the roller coaster was a great thing, but nothing like that, because every time you go up, whether landing and taking off on a carrier, any pilot that tells you he's got 1,000 landings or 500 landings or whatever, let me tell you, he is scared, just as scared as I would be for everyone that I went on, because the ocean, it doesn't stay the same, nor does the ship. So it's quite a dangerous job. Other than submarines, I think it's a a very hazardous job, but I loved doing what I was doing.
And I guess you have to have a lot of trust for that pilot, huh? Because that's got to be awfully scary. You can't see where you're going. You can't move because the pressure's so great, and your life is in his hands.
Yes. He was 20 years old. I'm 17. I thought he was an old man already, you know? And he was quite smart, but he was a great pilot. I remember one time we were coming down at 65-degree angle, and he kind of overshot the target, and he had to pull that nose back in. Where I was sitting, I would be almost in front of him instead of him in front of me. But he did the job, and he did it well. I'd like to say something about our squadron commander of the Top Hatters. Top Hatters are now 100 years old. I wear it proudly on my jacket, as the others did. And what he did was he sunk a Japanese battleship in one of their harbors by himself without his gunner and won the Navy Cross. Very proud of him. That's why I keep his picture posted here with the others. His name was Burke.
Lewis Burke.
Top Hatters are famous, and we're proud of it. And I think right now I'm the only one that I know of on this ship as a volunteer to wear the Top Hatter patch.
You are unique among the folks here, and you had a unique role. You mentioned being the gunner and having those twin 50s facing rear in this SB2C. What were the situations where you would actually have to fire those twin 50s?
Well, whenever we went out on a mission, whatever the mission was, as I said, I have no control of anything until he takes a dive and we try to complete our mission. We can't fight the enemy fighters because they're too fast for us. And our plane at that time, we were lucky to do 240 miles an hour, and these Zeros made of plywood would just fly right by or take it down. So we did our job, got out of there while our fighter planes were trying to protect us by fighting the Japanese fighters. We did the job and head back to the ship.
And you told me about the descent, about the dive, and what that felt like. But what about when he pulls back up after he's dropped the bomb?
Well, that feels great. You know you're going home. That's just great, I'll tell you. That's a feeling, boy. You're looking around, making sure there's nobody on your tail. And you just hope to get back in one piece. That's it.
Well, you say that, and I wonder if you had some close calls where you weren't sure you were going to make it back in one piece.
Well, I think the worst thing that happened to me was when my shipmate, we were both our first time off of an aircraft carrier, and he was before me. We took off, and coming back 5 hours later, I was right behind him. We were about 2 miles out behind, and when they came in, they missed the cable, slid over, and slammed right into the tower. And, oh, did that scare me? We got a wave off, and I didn't know whether we were going to make it or not. That's the scariest thing I had. There were others that saw a lot better action than I did. I was very lucky because the older fellas, they really looked after us young guys, and they called us kids. It's just like when I had my first flight and I came back. I hate to tell you, but I did kind of wet my pants. And when I got out, the chief master chief says, well, he says, I see you finally made it, didn't you? I said, yeah, I said, but I didn't think it was going to be like that, you know? He says, that's the trouble with you kids. You saw too many John Wayne movies. He says, did you ever see him get killed? I said, no. He said, then you better pray to God you don't. That's that.
That'll get your attention. You know, you mentioned getting your father to sign for you so you could go in at 17. Why was that so important to you? Why were you so determined to go serve?
Why? Because it was my country. They did everything that for my folks, my grandfather, grandmother, my father, and for me. What greater country could you be living in than be able to come here? I asked my father one time when I made pretty good. I said, Dad, wouldn't you like to go back to the old country? He says, what did the old country ever do for me? I love my customs. I love the music. I love the people. I love everything. But you can't beat America, he says, and I'm American. That's why.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I'm looking at your display here, and it says you served in Alaska as well as the South Pacific. two very different situations there. What were you doing in those two spots?
Well, of course, the Japanese. The other was the invasion of Alaska. A lot of people didn't realize that there were at least 25,000 to 30,000 Japanese up there, and we had to get them out. So we were going to start that invasion as we did Okinawa, go up there. But they didn't send any carriers. They sent us up with the Army Air Force was up there, and that's how I flew in the B-24 as a Navy version of the plane. Well, the Marines came in, and we were, the ships were shelling the shorelines and everything else. We were getting no response for 4 days. And then finally, what happens? We find out that they had moved out 5 days before we got there and went back to Japan, which was a very happy thing for us. Yeah, that's about what happened, yeah.
So that was in privateers or what?
That was a privateer, yes, PB4Y2.
How much more fun was that, being actually able to look out and not be facing backwards? And you probably had a much different feeling of flying in those.
Well, the thing is getting used. You know, you see, if you look at a B-24, like my friend Walter, he was a gunner, a waist gunner on a B-24 in Italy. And he explained what was happening. Then I knew when I got to be a waist gunner on a B-24, when you're firing 50 caliber machine gun and you got 50 caliber shells just shooting all over your feet and your legs and you're trying to balance yourself, that's not easy. Let me tell you, it's like on roller skates. So that's where the shells have to go someplace. And people never think about those shells that you're standing on trying to balance yourself. That's life. But I thank God. He's been good to me. I'm here and I'm talking to you. And I owe it to the man up there. And I never thought I'd live to 90. I just never thought that would happen to me.
Well, you're going strong at 90. And you're not just talking to me. You must have talked to thousands of people here over the last 14 years. What is the biggest message that you want them to hear when they come and see the Midway and they get to meet you?
When they come to meet me?
What do you want them to know about World War II and what you and all those 16 million other Americans did?
I want them to know that we do care. We're not just for ourselves, but for others. Others that are less fortunate than we are. And that's why we probably can't save the world. We can't be policemen to the world. But my thing of being proud of what I did was I fought for my country. I fought for the United States of America, for its freedom. I didn't fight for anybody else's country. I fought for America, and I'm proud of it. And my son served in Vietnam. I'm proud of him.
I got to ask you real quick, you're here a lot, but have you taken one of the honor flights back to Washington, D.C.?
Unfortunately, I didn't have to because I was in the Foreign Service in Washington, D.C. for 8 years.
So, but have you seen the World War II Memorial? Have you been back there for that?
Oh, yes. I watched them build it. Uh-huh. I was living there. I lived right across the river in Virginia. Yeah, I watched them do the whole thing.
What did that mean to you, to see that come together and to see what it's meant for so many in all these years since, more than a decade since they built it?
Well, it means an awful lot for one reason. Those who tour D.C. and see that memorial will never get to learn it in school because they don't teach it anymore. That's the sad part. We're forgotten. People come up and say, World War II. You know, that happened to me. There was a fellow from my father's country. He served in World War I, and he was talking to me about it. And I said to myself, my God, he's talking, you know, 30 years ago. I'm talking 73 years ago, you know. And here we are. He was telling me what was happening. And he was an immigrant also, a Portuguese immigrant, and fought for the United States. And what happened? I knew nothing about World War I until I got into the higher grades in school. Why they stopped it in school, I don't know. But I don't think it's a fair thing that we fought so hard to keep our country free and they don't teach the younger generation what really saved this country.
Well, I'm sure you're making a difference by telling that story here at the Midway. And I've got to ask you, since you spent so much time here, do you have a favorite spot on this ship or a favorite thing to look at that you think anyone coming to visit should check out?
The favorite thing that I enjoy most are the people who come here, who honor this ship and honor those that served on it, as well as the others that served in the military. That's the greatest reason I come here for, is because of those who can't.
Well, Joe, I just want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for what you're doing here at the Midway. Is there anything else you think people ought to know?
Love America. Love America. Protect it. That's it.
So I guess you never know who you're going to run into here on the Midway. What's the story about this picture of you and another sailor there in your dress whites?
It happened this way that there were people here standing here while I was describing what I did in the Navy, and there were an elderly couple in their 60s, and they were just standing on the side. When the people left, they came over, and the older the man said to me, "That little short guy in the picture," he says, "is that you?" And I thought by myself, "Well, hey, I can get to talk to him." I says, "Yeah, that's me." He said, "Well, what about that real tall guy there? Do you know him?" I says, "Yeah, we spent almost a year together, shipmates overseas." He says, "Do you remember where he's from?" I says, "Yes, he's from Chicago, Illinois." I said, "He's a Polish kid." He says, "Do you remember his name?" And I says, "Yeah, his name's Walter Roblewski." Guy stood there, tears rolled down his face. His wife was right next to him. I guess they were in their 60s. He said, "That's my father." His father was 19 years old. Both of us are 19 years old in that picture. He had never seen his dad in a Navy uniform. And when he saw it, he just cried. And I took the picture and I just gave it to him. And I never saw him again, but that makes me feel good. It's worthwhile coming down here to even put up these pictures that someone recognizes someone that they're missing.
You just never know, and I'm sure a lot of people are getting goosebumps right now just hearing you tell that story. Do you still get goosebumps when you tell it?
I do. I get the feeling, because just to watch that fellow standing there and then come up to me and just so quietly says, "That's my father." I mean, you know, I'm not expecting somebody to say, 73 years later, "That's my dad. I never seen him in a sailor uniform."
What a story. What a moment. And who knows what kind of eye-opening moments might be in store for you when you take a little time to see history come alive at the USS Midway Museum in San Diego. Again, the website, midway.org. I have that linked for you as well at hometownheroesradio.com. Thanks again to Carl Zingheim, to Tom Miller, and to Joe Neves for their time. And thank you so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more that freedom is not free.